There is a season in a young man's life when thinking wrongly about young women is considered cool. To objectify a young woman is considered normal. It's the way the guys talk and act and think. Dave Willis says as parents, we need to be directing our sons to think differently.
For young boys entering into adolescence, there are going to be a lot of opportunities for them to slip into that locker room mentality around a certain group of guys that on the surface might say, yeah, we respect girls, we respect women, but jokes start being shared that are clearly very disrespectful. Stories start being shared that are clearly very disrespectful. Images start being shared on phones or otherwise that are very objectifying toward women. And we need to teach our boys that it is not okay to compartmentalize a part of your life where you can go and be disrespectful for women and say, well, as long as it stays in that little tidy compartment, it's okay.
This is Family Life Today. Our hosts are Dave and Ann Wilson. I'm Bob Lapine. You'll find us online at familylifetoday.com. Are you raising your sons to know how to respect young women? Do you have a strategy for that? We're going to help you begin to develop one today. Stay with us. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. So we've been having this good time before we even started, right?
Yes.
We've been visiting with our guest today, Dave Willis, who joins us on Family Life Today. Dave, welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Dave is a speaker and author. He's a relationship coach. He's a television host on Marriage Today. He and Ashley are building resources to help with marriage at marriagetoday.com and exomarriage.com. They live in Texas. They've got four young sons. But what nobody until today.
Oh, this is going to be a special surprise.
What people have not known about Dave is that was it college acting class that you took, right?
That's right, yes.
And one of the assignments was to learn how to do accents, right?
That's right. And it has become a fascination ever since.
So I was mentioning these guys. We were talking about the Irish accent because I'd been with Keith and Kristen Getty
recently. Come on,
recently.
Bob, go ahead.
I was explaining that the way you do the Irish accent, you just take the long A sound and you say ia instead. So it's by Greas Drufiath that you're saved. So that's that. But then you broke into this Irish accent. So do a little Irish accent for us.
Well, there are kind of nuances, you know, throughout, because I grew up in Kentucky, and it's, hey, y'all, how you doing, man? It's kind of real country. We can do the whole thing like this, right? I'd be feeling right at home, where you only understand like one in five words, and those are my people. And then my wife and I went to Ireland a couple years ago, and, you know, she's a McCrae is her last name, and so this is in her blood. She's a redhead. And I just took to the Irish people. They're just so friendly. And I think the Irish accent is maybe the friendliest. It's like you can't even speak with an Irish accent unless you're smiling. You're just happy.
I don't know what you mean. You gotta tell
yeah,
me.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Oh, welcome to Ireland. Where are you from now? You're from the States. Oh, we're so glad to have you from here, America. We've been over to Boston now. Now, come over and have a pint with us. I'm like, well, I don't know if I should. I'm driving. Oh, yeah, a couple of pints won't hurt you. But, you know, it's like they're just really, really friendly people.
And you said the Scots are completely different than that.
Right, the Scots sound a bit more angry. It's kind of like if you watch Braveheart, you know, it's like the Irish with a bit more angst.
And then if you go down under, what happens?
Well, good eye, mate. If you go down under, it's a bit different altogether, you know. I'd say if you watch Crocodile Hunter, you get a bit of an idea what it's like.
No.
That's right. Congratulations. Wow.
You know what? We might have gotten you some gigs now.
Well, and here's the confusing part. If you Google Dave Willis, the only other guy that shows up is an actual voice actor.
Oh,
like,
really?
That's his deal, like a guy from the Cartoon Network that only does voiceover work. So we get confused for each other.
Well, if he ever can't do a gig, you could step right in.
Call
There's
me
no
up.
Question.
If you're going to be known for something and you have your choice between accents or coaching marriage and family,
right.
I think you picked the right
thing.
Well,
thank you. Thank you. You're too kind.
You've just written a book called Raising Boys Who Respect Girls. Marriage has been a focus for you for years. All of a sudden Now you're stepping into here and saying, we got to talk about how we raise our sons.
Yes, that's exactly right. And so, yeah, my wife, Ashley, and I, we're so honored to get to help marriages and encourage marriages and be part of the team at Marriage Today, which is a wonderful marriage ministry. And we love it. Just the same work you guys are doing here. We are strengthening marriages and families. We're changing generations. But what Ashley and I kind of discovered along the way as we're raising our four sons is that the world that our kids are growing up in isn't really preparing them for healthy relationships down the road. There's so much brokenness in our culture as it relates to relationships and as misguided views related to things like sex and relationships in general that we've got to be so intentional about preparing them for marriage and fatherhood down the road.
You got a wake-up call on this when you had a son come home from junior high and ask you a question.
Yes. Yeah, there have been a lot of wake-up calls along the way. One of the most kind of poignant ones, I think, one of the most sobering was when Cooper came home from his first day of eighth grade, and we're trying to ask him how his day was. Hey, how was your day, buddy? And like most eighth grade boys, he doesn't want to just sit down and talk about his feelings for long periods of time. He wants to get to the video games. So we keep gently prying him and kind of bribing him with snacks to stick around and keep talking to us. And then finally, before he goes upstairs, he goes, oh, well, there was one thing that happened that was kind of weird. And he said, let me ask you guys, do girls really like it when boys text them pictures of their genitalia? And we say, what? But we tried to not look shocked because we've learned that if you look shocked around your middle school boy, he just shuts down altogether.
So you're trying not to freak out.
Right, right. You're trying to just kind of probe a little. Mm-hmm. Like, well, why don't you unpack that for us,
I mean,
buddy?
What did that look like when he said that and you didn't freak out?
So,
I mean,
you know,
did you just smile or right, what?
Ashley and I kind of gave each other the raised brow look like, okay, this is going to be a different conversation than we were expecting. And we just kind of gently probed and said, well, buddy, why do you ask? What happened? And he said, well, you know, on the school bus, you know, on the way home on the bus, these boys were taking pictures of their genitals with their phones and then showing those pictures to other kids on the bus and then texting those pictures and laughing and saying, girls love it when they get stuff like this. And one boy tried to shoved the phone in my face, and I pushed him away and said, no, I don't want to see that. He said, but they were all laughing like this is a normal thing, so is this a normal thing? And Ashley, you know, very wisely said, look, girls, first off, do not like getting pictures like that. It's illegal, among other things, and if they're laughing as they get it, it's because they're nervous and they don't know what else to do, but it is really disrespectful. It is really inappropriate, and those boys were being just wrong on a whole number of levels, and we talked about it, and he said, well, that's what I thought, but I just wanted to make sure, because kids, they talk about a lot of stuff that they say is normal and they say is good, but I just don't think that it is, and so that was that, and he went up and played video games like nothing had happened, and it was just this wake-up call of what our kids are being raised with to think is normal. And you might picture this school bus and think it's like a prison bus headed to juvie or something, but it wasn't. I mean, these are, quote, good kids in good areas. This kind of mindset is happening everywhere.
And did you say, okay, we're homeschooling starting tomorrow?
Right, yes. Yeah. So turn in all devices. We're going to go, like, move to a cave, and we'll emerge when you're 40 years old. And I think finding that balance is really the tough part. How do we raise our kids to be in the world but not of the world? Yeah. How do we raise them to be a light right where they are while not letting the darkness have an undue impact on them, especially during these critical early years through childhood and through adolescence, where it's like there's wet cement in the mind and heart of a child? And any impression that's made there, especially as it relates to sex, especially as it relates to anything related to sex, is going to make impressions in their mind and heart. Over time, those impressions harden, and that child is going to see the world, see relationships, and see sexuality through the lens of those experiences. And we as parents have got to engage in the conversation. And I think that one of the main reasons why I wanted to write this book in the first place is because parents don't feel equipped to have these conversations. I mean, you guys are creating great resources like Passport to Purity, Passport to Identity. This has been immensely helpful in our family. I plug these resources specifically in the book because they've helped us so much. But what we're seeing is that parents don't know where to start the conversation, and parents really don't fully understand, for the most part, the world that the kids are growing up in, the mindsets that are being taught to our kids, and just the way that the culture is reinforcing some really negative mindsets as it relates to sex and relationships. So a big goal of the book is to just help parents engage in meaningful conversations with their sons that are going to lead to healthy places.
Talk about the world that your sons, our kids, are growing up in, because that conversation on the bus is something I didn't grow up in.
Yeah.
And I'm a little older than you, not much.
But you look younger somehow. Yeah. So what's the secret?
He never ages.
But think about it. You start the book with the current crisis. It's a different world that you just explained. What is that world?
Let me add to this, Dave. We as parents, I think the parents of this generation are in a panic because the prior generations have never dealt with this stuff. And so you can't find all these books written of this is how we did it because it's all new. So what would you say to Dave's question?
I think that we have to just acknowledge the obvious right off the bat, which is the question you asked, and that is that the world is different than it's ever been. Our kids have access to things that children in the past have never had access to. There's never been a time in human history where kids and adolescents have so much available at their fingertips. They have the information of the entire world, you know, in the palm of their hand with their phone. And even if they don't have a smartphone, there's a kid on the bus who does. Or even if you're homeschooling, even if you're doing everything you know how to do to isolate kids from the outside world, I promise you, they're getting access to things quicker than you realize. And we have to just start there, acknowledging that they have access to a lot of stuff, and we have to define reality in that way if we're going to move forward.
Well, and we're not just talking about the gender-based or the sexual relationship between boys and girls, because respecting girls goes beyond that. I'm thinking about the fact that in our culture over the last 10 years, there's been, I mean, movies are now coming out where girls are superheroes, and there are ad campaigns all designed to talk about girls are strong and girls are powerful and girls are special. I would think boys growing up in this culture would be growing up with a message that says girls are pretty important and you should respect them, because that's the message the culture is trying to send.
Yeah, it's true. Boys are growing up with really confused and conflicting messages right now. And so one thing the book is not, it is not in any way trying to bash boyhood or manhood or make boys feel bad for being boys or that there's something intrinsically wrong with them that needs to be corrected. It's calling all boys and all men to a higher standard of God-given masculinity, because true masculinity is a gift to both women and then to the men who embody it. Everybody wins when men behave as real men of honor and integrity. Boys don't know what manhood really means and looks like anymore. That was part of the problem. And we don't know how to articulate it to them. So this whole conversation with how to respect the opposite sex, it begins with learning how to respect themselves and learning what does it really mean to be a boy and a man. And again, there's so many conflicting messages about that right now, because a lot of the press they're seeing as it relates to boyhood and manhood is negative press.
Well, what's the most common word in front of masculinity in our culture
toxic.
Today.
Toxic.
Yeah,
toxic,
exactly.
Yep. Right.
So if you're a boy growing up and every time you hear masculinity, you think toxic, you think there must be something wrong here. I need to steer away from that.
It's true. And one of the saddest aspects of researching this book was realizing that a lot of young boys, a lot of young men, they're in some ways even ashamed of being a boy because they feel like there must be something wrong with me because masculinity by its nature must be toxic. That's all that I hear. And we see all of these shirts and slogans about, you know, kind of girl power. But anything that's even seen as kind of a male equivalent to that is automatically seen as suspicious or toxic. And so boys aren't sure what it means to be a man. And because of that, and yet there's all this within them that wants to express their masculinity, but they don't have a clear roadmap for how to do it, they end up finding these sort of counterfeit ways to do it. And a lot of it's based in technology. It's either the video game world, where they just become an avatar and play out their games and become a man online but not in real life, or the worst versions of technology, which is to fall into pornography, which I did as a young adolescent and still kind of carry baggage from that, which Ashley and I talk a lot about as part of our marriage ministry because we see the impact that's having in marriages. But our young boys are being exposed to porn at earlier and earlier ages. The average age of first exposure to porn right now is 10 years old. And that's, you can find similar stats both on secular sites and Christian-based sites, but kids are seeing porn early, and they don't know what to do with the feelings that creates. And it can lead them into this path of isolation or to shame. I know what a lot of that feels like from my own personal experience, but it's putting them on a path where it's leading to more broken relationships instead of healthy ones. And that has to be part of the conversation as well.
So what did the conversation feel like with Cooper after that first night? I mean, he tells you that about the bus. That's not going away, right?
Right.
The bus isn't going to be pure tomorrow. So he's going to have to walk back into that world, back in middle school, that kind of thing. And he goes, tells you guys, goes and plays video games. I'm guessing there's been more conversations. So
yes.
Help even parents think that through. Is like, okay, so how do we walk through this new world, this new crisis that our kids are growing up in?
I think the first step is simply vigilance. You know, we have to be in our kids' world, you know, and we have to be in our kids' world from an early age. We can't start important conversations with them when they're 16 and wonder why they don't want to open up to us. It has to start when they're in preschool or younger that we're really there for them. I heard a pastor once give an illustration that stuck with me. He said, we don't have to be the brightest light in our kids' world. He said, one time I was outside at night and there were all these distant lights, these distant stars, distant factories, distant streetlights. But the one light that was so close was the light of a firefly. And this little lightning bug is all I could see. And it's because he was right there in front of my face. And he said, in parenthood, you've got to be like that lightning bug. You don't have to be the biggest, brightest light in your kid's life. You just have to stay the closest. And if you stay the closest, you're going to have influence. And so for us, all these conversations have kind of centered around presence. Like, there's no substitute for just being present in our kids' world. And that means constantly engaging in conversation. And it also means just knowing what's happening in their world. It means tracking what's happening online. You know, we use software to know what everybody in the house is doing online. And we let everybody know that like, look, all of us are being held to a standard of accountability here because we want to protect everything that's coming into our home, everything that's coming into our minds. And we need to know, like, what you're looking for online and what messages those videos you're watching on YouTube might be putting into your head. And we try to every single day kind of have a time where we're connecting. We do it once at the dinner table, just kind of going around the circle and having the group conversation. And then for each kid individually, you know, we end the day with one-on-one time at bedtime when they're a captive audience. You know, there's no other distractions, no phones, nothing else going on, to really unpack the day, to talk about what they're feeling, what they're thinking, what they experienced that day. And that daily interaction, I think, is the biggest part of just continuing to build trust and credibility with our kids so that we can be a voice in their life with whatever they're facing.
Do your boys have a right to privacy?
No, not in our house. We tell them that, listen, I pay for these phones. You know, as long as you're under my roof, there are certain rights and restrictions that you have to abide with. The rights are, you know what, you get to eat, you get unconditional love, you get your braces paid for, you know, you get two parents that would jump in front of a bus for you if it came for that. But the restriction part is that, you know, I'm going to stand before God one day and give an account of how I protected you while you're under my roof. And because of that, I need to know everything that's happening under this roof because I'm the one who's going to be held accountable for it. And so your right to privacy is that I am going to know what's happening on every device in this house because I have to. And without that vigilance, that's the very tool that the enemy could use. Not that technology is evil. We've used technology in our ministry as the major tool to reach people right. with the gospel and with help for their marriages. But at the same time, that tool that's so powerful to help can also be a powerful hindrance if it's being used in the wrong way. And we've got to know what's happening.
Dave, even the way you described that, your conversation was open. It was loving. It wasn't, you guys aren't going to have any freedom. You know, I'm going to take these phones. It was, this is why I'm doing this. It's because I love you. So even the fact that your son Cooper would come to you and be open and ask you those questions about the bus says to me he trusts you and he has a relationship with you. So I'm guessing those conversations didn't happen as a 14-year-old or 13-year-old, but they started when he was pretty young. How did you and Ashley do that? How did you open those doors of conversations that maybe we need to have with our kids? When does that start?
I think as soon as they can talk. I think even before they can talk, you know, we're speaking life to them. We're holding them in our arms. We're speaking blessing over them. And we're creating that atmosphere of trust that'll hopefully carry on all the way through. And there are little seeds we can plant all the way through that are going to help specifically in these areas of respect, you know, talking about respecting themselves, how God made them. They're fearfully and wonderfully made. They're created perfectly the way God intended them. And he's got a plan for them to be a courageous man someday who's going to have a world-changing impact. And we just kind of speak life over them in that way. And then also from an early age, trying to speak respect in how they treat their mom, first and foremost, the first woman in their life. It's very important to me that they respect their mother in a proper way and they show her the respect that she deserves. But that also they're learning that the girls in their life through preschool or wherever else are people worthy of their respect, that they don't just say, well, no, girls are yucky or this and that. And of course, there's sometimes where, you know, boys just want to play with boys, girls want to play with girls, and that's totally fine. But at the same time, to train them early on to see girls as equals. They're different. They're created by God exactly how they're meant to be. And God gave some very specific distinctions between manhood and womanhood. And our culture has tried to erode those distinctions and take away the beautiful God-givenness of femininity, just as it has with masculinity, trying to make it all just one mixed-up soup where nobody is really anything. But to say, no, God made those girls just perfect as they're meant to be, and you need to respect them. And a kind of a quick example of that is just teaching our boys to be thoughtful. Our little boy went through the McDonald's line at the drive-thru a couple days ago, Chatham, and he got a Happy Meal, and they accidentally gave him a girl toy. It was a Barbie doll instead of a Pokemon, and he was so bummed. He was like, oh, gross, it's a girl toy, and he wanted to throw it away. And we're like, well, I said, well, hang on a second now. I said, there are some girls in your preschool class that love Barbie. And he said, yeah, Chelsea loves Barbie. I said, what if you took this to school tomorrow and you said, Chelsea, I've got a present for you. And you gave it to her and maybe you two could play together and you could play with your trucks or whatever and she could play with her doll, but it would, the gift is a way to build the friendship. And he was so excited to take this toy he was going to throw away and now to use it as a gift the next day. And it fostered a friendship. And now the last couple of times I picked him up, they were playing. You know, he was playing with his trucks and action figures and she was playing with Barbie, but they were playing side by side. And that was a beautiful sight to me.
You point out in the book that we can help our sons reorient their thinking about what it means to respect women by looking at how Jesus respected women. Jesus was countercultural in his attitude toward women in his day.
Yes. I mean, and it was something that was almost shocking to the culture around him and even to his disciples. You know, in Jesus's day, Jewish men, and specifically rabbis, Jewish teachers as Jesus was, did not communicate directly with any woman who was outside their immediate family. It was just a cultural taboo. And yet all through Jesus's ministry, you see Jesus developing friendships with the opposite sex, as he did with Mary and Martha, for example. You see him developing important conversations, as he did with the woman at the well at John chapter 4, which is the second longest recorded one-on-one conversation anywhere in the Gospels. And from that one story, we get so many truths about salvation and grace that aren't really recorded exactly that way anywhere else. We see Jesus using examples as females as heroes in his stories, in his parables. You know, he used the example of a persistent widow, a woman who would have been seen in the culture as someone without any clout at all, and he raised her up as the example of persistence and faith, as one who was courageous and bold and brought her requests and then told us to pray like her. He used the example of a woman who lost a coin of great value and her persistence in looking for it and said, now you guys need to be like her and your persistence in looking for the lost. So all through Scripture, both in his stories, both in his teaching, and in his relationships, Jesus valued and respected women in a way that that seemed countercultural and almost scandalous at times. And I think that we, especially as followers of Christ, should look to him as the example, because so many people we've looked to as examples on the surface have done a lot of things right, but then behind the scenes, we, you know, we've seen these stories come out on the news of some of our heroes who have fallen, and we think, well, maybe there's just nobody we can look to that's the perfect example. But Christ is always that perfect example in all parts of our life. But I think one way we've overlooked him as an example is in this area of how men should be respectful toward women.
So, Dave, talk about this. How do you teach your, especially teenage boys, to take the Jesus perspective, respecter of women, into their world? Have you modeled? Have you taught? I mean, what do they do walking through the halls, walking even on the bus? How do they live that out as young men?
I try to encourage them to be wary of what I call the locker room mindset that happens, especially from middle school on into manhood. And great things can happen in a locker room. You know, I wasn't super athletic, so I didn't spend a lot of time in locker rooms unless I was getting hit with a wet towel by somebody. But locker rooms can be a place where men really bond and great things can happen. So I'm not saying all locker rooms are bad. I'm just using that terminology to explain any area of a man's life, whether it's online or whether it's in a physical locker room or a boardroom or even just a place in his mind where he feels like it's safe for him to be disrespectful toward women or objectifying toward women or to look at women as sexual objects instead of souls to be cherished. And I think for young boys entering into adolescence, there are going to be a lot of opportunities for them to slip into that locker room mentality around a certain group of guys that on the surface might say, yeah, we respect girls, we respect women, but jokes start being shared that are clearly very disrespectful. Stories start being shared that are clearly very disrespectful. Images start being shared on phones or otherwise that are very objectifying toward women. And we need to teach our boys that it is not okay to compartmentalize a part of your life where you can go and be disrespectful for women and say, well, as long as it stays in that little tidy compartment, it's okay. That they need to know that all parts of our life have to be an open book before God. And if we're going to live with honor and integrity, and if we're going to be men of God, and in this specific case, if we're going to be respecters of women, it has to be in all parts of our life. It can't be just in this part online, I'm not respecting women, or in this one group of friends, I'm not respecting women. It's got to be all over. And just trying to continually call them back and even call myself back to that standard.
I don't think, at least I don't remember ever having a conversation with my dad about how to treat a woman. I wish I'd had some, right? I wish I'd had some coaching and some training in that area because I was just trying to figure it out. I mean, I saw stuff modeled that was healthy and I knew you should hold the door for women. I mean, I got those kinds of things. But I don't remember ever being taught how to value, how to cherish, how to honor, how to esteem, to exalting the value and worth of women in my world. And in our day, the need for that is so great. And Dave, it's one of the reasons why we're glad you're giving parents a book like this to help guide us as we raise sons in this culture. The book we're talking about is called Raising Boys Who Respect Girls, Upending Locker Room Mentality, Blind Spots, and Unintended Sexism. Great book for parents who are raising young men. You can order it from us online at familylifetoday.com, or you can call 1-800-FL-TODAY to get a copy. Again, our website, familylifetoday.com. Order the book online or call 1-800-358-6329. 1-800 F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. Again, the title of the book, Raising Boys Who Respect Girls by Dave Willis. By the way, one of the things we have recommended for years for dads and sons to do, or for moms and daughters to do, as the kids are entering the teen years, before they get to adolescence, before the hormones have kicked in their lives, get a couple of days and get away with your son or with your daughter and start to have some conversations about what's ahead. Talk about peer pressure. Talk about boys and girls and about dating and about the birds and the bees. All of those important conversations. We've put together a resource that's designed to tee that up for you as a parent. It's something called Passport to Purity, and it's been used by hundreds of thousands of parents. And it's opened the door for some really significant conversations in the lives of those dads and sons or moms and daughters. This week, we want to make Passport to Purity, the kit, available to you if you can support the Ministry of Family Life with a donation. And in fact, we'd like to throw in a copy of a book by Vicki Courtney that's called Five Conversations You Must Have with Your Son. So there's some follow-up once you come back from your Passport to Purity getaway. We'll send the book and the kit to you as a thank you gift when you make a donation this week. Let me just say, donations to this ministry are the lifeblood of Family Life Today. If this program has been helpful, if you think this is the kind of program that you want to continue to have available in your community to help other moms and dads, other husbands and wives with practical, biblical help and hope for your marriage and your family, make a donation today so that the ministry can continue and expand. And again, request these resources when you do. Go online to familylifetoday.com or call 1-800-FL-TODAY to donate. Be sure to ask for the Passport to Purity kit and for the book Five Conversations You Must Have with Your Son. Or if you've got daughters, ask for the book Five Conversations You Must Have with Your Daughter. Either way, we'll get the resources out to you. And thank you for your support of this ministry. And we hope you can join us again tomorrow. Dave Willis will be here again, and we're going to talk more about how we help our sons think rightly about the opposite sex during a time when their attitudes are being shaped by their peers and by culture. How do we influence them as parents? We'll talk more about that tomorrow. I hope you can join us. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, along with our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our hosts, Dave and Ann Wilson, I'm Bob Lapine. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas, a CREW ministry. Help for today, hope for tomorrow.